Good evening. Wonderful to see so many beautiful faces. Some familiar from the Zen Heart Sangha. Of course, familiar from the Wildflower Sangha. We have people from, we've extended across Europe, from the southern tip in Lisbon to the northern tip in The Hague. Wonderful. Joa and I have been on a retreat this week, preparing for his transmission, immersed in the lineage and the stories and the essence of our practice, and seeing you all, it really brings it to life. And particularly, I'm delighted to welcome my dear Dharma brother, Sensei Michel Nanciel. Michel and I go way back. More than 25 years on this path together. Our children grew up together. We have always shared this householder path with managing careers and family life and partners. Michel was an engineer. He was a psychotherapist. He founded a school for his children. He managed to walk this path and devote himself to this practice all these years as well. And I'm very happy to have him here tonight and share his teachings with you. And I'm really happy to hear him because I rarely get a chance to hear him speak. I hope that there will be some time for questions and answers at the end. It is being recorded, the talk, but only the audio. So you will not be appearing on anything that we post, because we post our talks on our website and on our YouTube channel and things. So welcome to all of you, and most welcome to Sensei Michel.
Wow. So many faces. Ida, Dominique, how nice to see you. Tanya. Wow. Actually, thank you for your kind words, Amy. We do go back a long way. Huh? When I think back over all these years, and seeing all your faces and many of you that I don't know, It brings up such a, it's actually quite amazing and very moving. Amy Roshi was a tremendous inspiration on my path, because when I started on this householder path, you made it so obvious to me that it was possible, that this is a path that is passable, that practice in raising children, and actually it was you who was the inspiration for the children's weeks in Vimoche, remember? The plays that we did, and not so long ago, actually, I was talking with Tenkai Roshi in Zen River, and they have these children's retreats now in the summer, in at Zen River. And hearing about this and how Roshi, Gen Roshi allowed this and how you basically started all that and made it possible, that inspiration actually reaches out to Zen River. That's Denkyo Roshi told me that's where he got the inspiration to do this. And I think it's tremendously moving to see this, this oneness of this path, this complete shared path that even that we share, even if we don't know that about each other, how these paths are intertwined. But with you, Amy, it was so, you were such an inspiration, and you still are, actually. It's very, very moving. And it's so nice to see all these faces. Actually, my screen doesn't make any kind of differential between this Sangha or that Sangha. It's all one Sangha, we are working. I'm telling you a little secret, but if you promise me not to share it with anybody, we are working. It's not definitive, but we are working on doing another Mahasangha retreat in 2022.
Wow.
Which is going to be big. But you know, it depends on circumstance and situation and Corona and God knows what, but there's this oneness of it that is, it's such a powerful element of our path, this spiritual friendship that is so important. The view is beautiful, frankly. There is something actually that I wanted to share with you. I talked with Joa about this a while ago. I have this passion. It's more than a hobby. It's getting out of hand. I am very interested and taken by the texts of the original Theravadin texts of the suttas, the Theravadin suttas, the Pali canon. And the project that I've been working on for these past years is rewording them to the extent that they speak to me more easily than they do when you read them at first glance. You have to understand that the suttas came out of an oral tradition that was passed from teacher to student, from narrator to community. Because very few people at that time could read and write, it was all an oral tradition. So it was passed really literally as word of mouth. And then later people started to write them down and then even much later they started to be translated into English. That many of these English translations are really difficult to penetrate because there's constant repetition going on. And a lot of the translators are worried about losing some of the originality of the texts. So they become really difficult to use. And the project that I've been working on is trying to reword them, reframe them. And I'm taking the risk of losing some of the, but I have to take it where I am. I might lose some of the meaning of it because my understanding doesn't, you know, it reaches only so far. But I feel I feel for myself and for others this need to get closer to the meaning of these words in a way that makes them more accessible. And one of the sutras that I've been working with and I'm still working on is called the Maha Rahulofada Sutta. It's actually very moving. If I can indulge in a little part of the story of the Shakyamuni Buddha, the guy left his home when he was 29, and he left a wife and a young baby behind. But then he goes through this path and this process, really passionately searching. And then many years later, when he's established the community of monks, it's actually already quite a big establishment. He's in his mid-40s somewhere, and he reconnects with his former wife, the mother of his son, and his son. And his son is called Rahula. So this quite short text is about the Buddha talking to his son. And he does so with such clarity and such tenderness. There's so much love between these two. And that spoke to me. So I decided to work with it. The question that Rahula comes, asks his father, one evening after sitting, he goes to his father, who's the abbot, and he says, in my words, Dad, how can I improve my practice? What advice do you have? I want to go deeper, and I'm wondering if you can help me be more clear about the reality of my life. And then the Buddha says this, among a few other things, and I've rewritten it so all the errors are my mistakes. The Buddha says this to his son: this body, this form, this shape, is it really you? Is it really yours? Who is the inhabitant of this body? As a shape, it seems solid. But while we might think it is a separate, independent me self in the flesh, incarnated, it is in fact inseparable from the food it eats, the water it drinks, the air it breathes, the earth it stands on, where it came out of which it is part, and to which it will return. This body is earth. The blood is ocean. Its warmth is sun. Its moods are summer and winter, rain and sunshine. Its breath is the universe. This is so. How about that? This body that you inhabit, its warmth is sun, and it's kind of warm here. Its blood is ocean. Its body is earth. And when I read that, when I hear that, because it's not, every teacher in this tradition has repeated these same words for centuries. I don't know about you, but for me, even without understanding why, what, how, I know somewhere intimately that it is true. It's irrefutable. It's you can't deny the reality of this fact. And much of my practice is basically trying to return to this, to remember that this is so. whenever I get caught up in my ideas and my thoughts and, you know, all these identifications that I have. I'm a man. I have a beard. I'm looking at Tanya, and Tanya doesn't have a beard. Thank God. No beard. So you might be tempted, I might be tempted to think, okay, so I'm a man and Tanya's a woman. I'm Dutch and she's British. The differences are, you know, inexhaustible. There's so many things that I can see in which Tanya and I are different. Actually, every one of you. It's just think of this for a moment. Just let it work on you. There is not a single entity in this whole entire, unbelievably big universe that is exactly like you. Barring these ideas that there are parallel universes, then I might exist in two different universes at the same time, which is a very, very scary thought. Ugh. But apart from that, yeah, it's amazing to see the uniqueness of all these faces. And it's one of the things that I appreciate about doing this on Zoom. I see so many faces and they're all different. Each one of you is unique. And that might tempt us in just seeing that. We just see, you know, actually the usual state of mind is to just see that. And you can always see it physically in the way we look at the world. We look at the world outside, which isn't outside, but that's the way we see it. We see, you know, this is me looking at the world. It's as if, in a sense, I'm the center of this whole universe, which is kind of a weird thought. But in this me, myself, and I mold, the whole universe just revolves around me. But this kind of a separation just... What does it bring up for us? If I see only that, if that's the only vision that I have, I become lonely. I become scared because I see that the world is vast and wide and I'm just this little guy. I feel scared because, you know, that fear is almost of this one very vulnerable person, this one very vulnerable body has a genetically built-in fear. There's no avoiding it. You're going to be scared. If you practice in order to be free from fear, you might get disappointed. Did I ever tell you? No, probably. Well, some of you I did tell this, but this story about these two ancestors of ours, they lived in East Africa about 100,000 years ago. And one was called Nerg and the other one was called Urg. And they've only just come down the trees and they're walking on the savannah and they're beginning to hunt. And Nerg is a very happy-go-lucky, outgoing, spontaneous, ready to investigate humanoid, very early human being. Urg, however, is extremely suspicious, easily scared. And they're walking together on the savannah. There are still saber-toothed tigers going about and woolly-haired mammoths and God knows what. It's a very dangerous place. And all of a sudden there's this shaking in the bushes. And Nurk says, oh, there's something shaking in the bushes. Let's go and investigate. And Urg is already climbing the nearest tree. Nurg is not your ancestor. Urg is. Nurg got eaten. So the one who passed his genetic makeup, including all the fears, is still here. So if you want to be free from this kind of fear, then and that's not going to work. But what if we were to drastically turn this around, which is, you might think, oh, this is kind of counterintuitive, because I've developed over the years a million different strategies to be away from fear, to deal with it, to try and, you know, to be less afraid, make different circumstances. But I'll share this experience with you. Amy mentioned that at a certain point, I gave up my job, a pretty well-paid job, as an engineer and a manager, and I became a therapist. And my income went like, and I still had, you know, I had three kids. They needed to go to university. At least that's what I thought, and that's actually what they did. So I needed to pay the bills, and it was like, Jesus, what have I done? So I got scared, and my income was dwindling. I didn't know how to make ends meet, and you know, I would lie awake at night. Can you relate to that experience? And then one night I couldn't sleep. I was going, how am I going to do this? How am I going to, you know, who can I ask for help? Can I ask my mother for a loan? You know, all these things. I got up out of bed because I didn't want to wake up Helen, my wife. And I sat in front of the window downstairs, middle of the night. And what came up for me, thanks to Roshi and practice and Amy and you know, the people that inspired me to sit, because it's not an achievement. But what came up for me was simply this: I'm scared. To be honest, I've been scared all my life. Had a thousand different forms: insecurity, fear, cynicism. That's a good way to deal with fear. Well, I don't recommend it, but have you ever caught yourself doing this? I don't care. Which is a sure sign that you do care, huh? Yeah, it's just trying to fuck yourself into believing that you're less scared. But all that came out was, I'm afraid. What does that, if you were to do that for yourself, what does that open up for you? What does it open up if you simply admit that you are a human being? Things happen if you do. Actually, because I wasn't only focused on that at that point, there was two movements going on at the same time. It took me a while to figure that out. But one movement was to go inside, and even without noticing what I was doing, asking, who is this? Who is this guy? is this person that feels so completely responsible for everything in what was going on with my family, income and God knows what, who is this guy who is actually so scared but so arrogant at the same time to believe that he himself is single-handedly responsible for the well-being of this? Wait a minute, I'm not alone in this. Who is this? How solid is this? And at the same time, I was sitting there in the darkness and I could, you know, basically chanting to myself, I'm afraid, I could see that there was a light going there and there was somebody awake there. And there was another light on the other side of the street. And you know, The Hague is not a, it's not a huge place. It's we have about 500,000 people living here. I don't know where you are exactly. Some of you are in Paris. It's kind of bigger, but it still works. There's like, how many people? 7 million people living in Paris. That means that tonight there will probably be 250,000 people, at least, lying in bed, scared, worried, can't sleep. So wait a minute, so this fear is not just my fear. And this being here is not just this guy. It sort of imploded and exploded at the same time. You know what? I think each and every one of you knows this experience. Otherwise, you wouldn't even be here. You all know this. You all know this. It's not some secret or mystical experience. It's very practical. The Buddha was a very practical man. Could have been an engineer. So there's this in this explosion, in this maybe it's not such a good word, This scared little guy doesn't all of a sudden disappear. The fear doesn't disappear. The pain doesn't disappear. But the solidity of the one who is afraid becomes less. This desperate, clearly this is a tragedy basically, because the strategy that we use in order to be less afraid, to have less pain, that usually involves retreating into myself and making myself more solid, creating the circumstances that will make me less afraid, solidify me, and that just reinforces the fear. What does this do for you? Every one of you, you know, you look at the other faces on your screen. Switch off speaker view. Look at gallery view. Just look at gallery view. If you have speaker view, just drop it. Look at gallery view. Look at all these faces. It's beautiful. Actually, you guys don't even fit on one screen for me. It's amazing. Look at these faces. You know some of them, many of them. You might, you know, new faces for you. Every face you see knows fear. Every person you see, whether you know them or not, deeply knows suffering. We all know this. It's fundamental. So the moment we stop being only focused, because it doesn't make my suffering go away, but the moment we stop focusing only on me, myself, and I suffering, what happens? What happens to your heart when you do that? I so like these silences. Each of you is going through, you know, you hear your own thoughts or you feel your own feelings. And at the same time, we all know, every one of us knows, that in a way, in a very mysterious sense, you know what the others feel. You wouldn't be able to put words to it. You wouldn't be able to, you know the details of it. But underneath this, all these diverse individual fears and pains and suffering and joy, and you know, there's a lot of joy too. Underneath, there is just this one thing, this one spacious, open-hearted, wholehearted. Okay, this is going to go sappy, I'm sorry, but it's just one huge ocean of love. And there's no explaining it, but we all know it. In a sense, we could say this is why these communities that we have, and now we're just, you know, this is one community, why they're so precious. Because we can see in this community that this is true. That all these faces are part of one screen, that all these waves are part of one ocean. But it's, you know, if I go into the metaphor of the waves in the ocean, you know, it gets a little, we might get a little, gets a little abstract. No, it's right here, right now, all your faces. And that's what the Buddha told Rahula. I mean, or another way of saying it, that's what one Buddha says to other Buddhas. Feel free to share whatever comes up for you in this. Huh? So we have some time left. So if you want to share something, then please do.
So how come you don't feel this ocean of love often?
Mark, was that you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, in the Zen Heart Sangha, I've spoken before of the different kinds of questions that the Buddha would answer according to the category. I mean, there are the questions that you answer with it's like this or it's like that, which is, you know, categorical or analytical answers. But this is a question from the third category. And the category, the third category, the fourth category is the category of questions that you don't answer at all. But this one is the third category, which is you just flip the question back to the one who asks it. So, Mark, why is it that you don't feel? I'm only half joking. What I'm asking you is to, and it's not easy what I'm asking you, but to share what you know about this. Why is it? Because we all know this question, huh? It's a really relevant question. Why is it that we so often forget?
It's like after 12 years of doing Zen, I think the answer would be it's because of thinking you're separate from the rest of the world.
Yeah. And that is a very deep-seated habit. It's an addiction, in a sense. You could say, well, yeah, am I addicted to this, that, but the other thing, yeah, but the core of my addictions is my addiction to me, myself, and I. It's a habit. And because we've learned this habit so young, and and it gets reinforced by so many things, you know, we all want to be this perfect individual. Let me ask you, it's a question to all of you. How much time and effort do we expend asking ourselves, usually not loudly, but you know, internally asking ourselves, what do they think of me? Do they think that this Dharma talk is any good? Or is it really shitty? How much effort? I'm only half joking. How much effort and time do we invest in this question? In these kind of questions that actually just reinforce this habit of forgetting? Of forgetting to reconnect, to remember. That's actually why this helps so much, to sit together in silence. I've never experienced this tremendous sense of oneness, togetherness, until I started sitting in silence with other people. It was such a powerful experience. That's why we forget, Mark. And learning to, you know, Corinne Sensei would often quote the Hasidic masters. She was and still is, I guess, deeply interested in the Hasidic tradition. And there's this guy, this rabbi who founded the Hasidic tradition, the Baal Shem Tov. And one of his sayings is, to forget is to live in exile. To remember is redemption. That's my practice. I forget, and then I have to remember. I forget, and I get stuck in me, myself, and I, and my stories, and this and that. And why is this? Oh, who is? Are you? What are you thinking of me? Am I doing this right? Am I doing this? Blah blah blah. Doesn't all of a sudden magically disappear. But the moment, like now, when I look at all your faces, and I know that you and I are intimately connected and always have been and always will be, that's when I remember. You might very well say that I became a Zen teacher in order to help me remember and get your help in that, because you guys help me. That's the support of practice, in which I try to support your practice, and you certainly support mine. It's such a pity I can't see all these faces in one screen. But there you are. There's one other thing that I want to mention, actually, just comes up from your question, Mark. And you know, I beg you, all of you, please don't go on this track that says, not only why do I forget so often, but there is very often this sentence that comes behind that that we don't really express and therefore don't address. Why do I forget so often? I'm such an idiot. Do you know that one? Because the moment where when we go there, when we take our suffering, we take our failures as personal failures, we don't help ourselves at all. We just solidify this one. We just make this one more solid and more solid and more solid. If you've forgotten, you've forgotten. You're an unrealized Buddha. If you've forgotten, you've created for yourself the opportunity to remember. The moment you remember, you're practicing. So always have this, you know, Chögyam Trungpa would say, always base yourself, and I love this word that he uses a lot, in this mildness, in this tenderness towards self and others. Always base yourself in this tenderness. Let me rephrase that, sorry. Always try to base yourself in that tenderness, because it's not so easy. It's a sort of, it's a tenderness that I feel comes out of the Buddha's words towards his son. It's really, it echoes for me this part of Shantideva where he says that this is really about loving the other. And even you could say loving this limited self, me, Michelle, I, as a mother would love her only son. And of course, it being 2021, as a parent loving his or her only child. But that kind of love, that kind of, you see the intimacy there, because there's a parent and a child, and the parent has a different role. And yet in this intimacy, there is no separation whatsoever. I agree that kind of as a father, as a householder, that really speaks to me.
Michel?
Yeah.
When I started Zen, I could never have thought that I need so much patience with myself. So very, very much patience.
Yep. Yep. Thank you for saying that. Actually, thank you for reminding me, because the one that I have least patience with is this one. Yep.
Sensei?
Yes.
João here.
Hiya, I see you.
Good evening, everyone. There was this story two years ago, I think, during a retreat. There was this short story that you talked about, it has always stayed with me, and it's been even with Amy Roshi, it has come up several times also, and this goes back to that episode you were talking about of fear and realizing fear. And it's such an important, and it's very simple. You said you were talking about how you were just experiencing some sort of difficulty at the time. You were really having a hard time with it. And you were speaking with Gino Roshi, and this is how you put it. It was so striking for me. You know, this is how you really put it. Roshi, I'm really having a hard time with this. You know, help me. This is how you said it. And her answer to you was, okay, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you. Stay exactly where you are.
Yep.
And this was so, so, so big.
Yeah.
Stay exactly where you are. I'm going to help you. Stay exactly where you are. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for reminding me of that one. I mean, there were other moments where I went to Roshi and said, you know, Roshi, this, that, the other thing, how the Buddha, mind, emptiness, blah, blah, blah. And how am I, can you help me? And Roshi would respond like, oh, Michelle, if you go on like this, I'm going to get a headache. That's also very helpful. But in this dilemma, I remember the story, that this huge dilemma that I had, and you know, to be honest, at that time, I was sometimes so jealous of all these people who lived in Paris, the people who could come and go and see Roshi every day. Amy Roshi, who lived in the house. And it was, there was this moment. I was doing several flip-flops around this at the same time. There was this moment. I was so jealous of Amy being able to live in the house. I was actually so jealous of that I didn't see how difficult that actually was. Whew. How difficult that situation was. Maybe you know about this, maybe you've told them, Amy, although I think you probably did not, but I will tell them, I'm sorry. That she lived with Alain, a true bodhisattva, and one and then later two children in, you know, tiny one room, a room for what is now Roshi's kitchen for Morgan. And then eventually they got one extra room when William was born. But I didn't see all that. I just thought, damn, they can live with her. I can't. So one night actually Amy's bedroom, living room, living quarters was also the Dyson line. You remember that, Amy? Oh yeah, that was it. We would sit in her room next to her bed waiting for Dyson. Ken Roshi was then a sensei. And we got to chat because there was a long line and we were sort of whispering in the background and I sort of blurted it out like, oh, wow. And as I was speaking, I realized, God, it is not so easy, this. And then Amy, are you okay with me telling this story, Amy? Okay. What you said to me was that you felt that you were not doing enough, that you were not giving enough to the Sangha, that you were, and I was like, what? I think I said to you, you're not giving enough, but we're actually in the Dyson line in your bedroom. Your whole life is giving to the Sangha. And I, you know, I did a sort of a take and a double take. I realized what I'm jealous of is her life, but I have to live my life. I have to do it my way. I have to stay exactly where I am. And what I found so helpful and inspiring was to see that I'm not alone in going through the struggles of this practice, this life. I have a recommendation for all of you. On Netflix, if you have Netflix, but it's actually worth getting next Netflix for just this one. There is this short documentary about the life of Ram Dass, his last years. You know, Ram Dass was an American teacher. He had a huge stroke at a certain point. The title of this short documentary is "We Are All Just Walking Each Other Home." I think that's so beautiful. We are all just walking each other home. And in a way you can say we're all reminding each other as we walk each other home, that we are home, exactly where we are, that we've never left home, but that we forget. Such a beautiful, really, there's many other things. It's only half an hour, but really, I recommend it. Yes. Actually, now that I think of it, I'm wondering, why didn't I think of this before? there's this image where he's sitting in a chair. You can see his body is broken. Huh? He had this huge stroke. Took him years to learn to speak again. And they have to hoist him into the pool. They have to hoist him out. And when they go to the beach, there's this little cart that they wheel him into the sea and wheel him out because he can't walk. You can see the brokenness of the body, the suffering. And he's sitting there and he's looking out over the ocean and he's simply chanting. I mean, the guy had a practice of 50 years or something, and he's still simply reminding himself. And he's chanting, I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. He's reminding himself of that. But for now, we're all just walking each other home. Okay? What's the time? It's 3 minutes before. Amy, do you wanna, I didn't leave you much time, I'm sorry. You wanna add something?
I don't really have, I didn't need to say anything. You've said it all.
Oh shit, what about my eyebrows?
Oh, they're still there. So yes, I'm very, very happy, and to hear the old stories and new stories, and to hear your translation of the sutras. It's an exciting project too. At some point, someone had raised a hand to talk, and then she put her hand down again. So I don't know if this is the last chance for a question if someone wants to ask one.
It was about Nurk, that he forgot as well, sometimes at least, and he made us live.
Yep. Scared as he was. Yep. In a sense, you're talking about lineage. So one way of looking at it. Because Nurg is still here and still there. I can't hear you, Amy.
Well, I was asking Joe if the sound was on. It was not on. if no one has anything else to add, we can add the four vows, which is usually how we end our evenings. And we also chant the Jikido will chant the evening gatha as well. So thank you all very much for coming. Thank you, Michelle Sensei. I hope to see you all somewhere this summer. otherwise online, you're all welcome. Zen Heart Sangha, you're welcome to join us at any time. You now have the secret link, so you're welcome in our Zendo anytime. I hope you have a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Joa. Take care.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to see it. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Let us awaken, awaken, take heed, do not squander your life.
Thank you, everyone. See you soon.
Thank you very much.
Franz, wonderful. Hi. To see you. So happy to see you.
Yes, me too.
You, Franz.
Hi, hi.
Hi.
Ida and Dominique too. Hello.
Great. Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.